This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Men Talk on Plains FM 96.9. This is a playful search for understanding and appreciation of men. Your hosts are Donald Pettit from the Canterbury Men's Centre and me, Ian Ferguson, Coordinator of International Men's Day in New Zealand. We'd like to thank the Christine Taylor Foundation for Mental Health for supporting this show. Today we talk to Jim and Paul from Male Survivors, a support group for men who have been sexually abused. If you would like to talk to someone about sexual abuse issues, contact details will be given at the end of the show. We recorded this on the second day of the COVID-19 lockdown via video conferencing. There are some minor audio problems.
We've got a bunch of questions we want to ask our guests, so perhaps if Jim, you could introduce yourself.
I'm Jim Goodwin. I'm a peer support worker with men who have been sexually abused, working out of the Canterbury Men's Centre.
And Paul, what about you?
Kia ora, Ian. I'm Paul from Male Survivors, and I am the peer support manager there.
So what's Male Survivors?
Male Survivors Sexual Abuse Trust. It's where men that have been sexually abused, predominantly through childhood, come and talk to us about some of their experiences.
I'll start with you maybe, Paul, since we got you on the screen. The first question is, who are you in relation to Male Survivors of Sexual Abuse? And as a person, so you already said you're the manager of the service at the Moon Center.
So thanks, Donald. I went to counselling for many, many years about some stuff that happened to me as a child. And while I had a beautiful counsellor, we got to a point where she said, would you like to meet other men that had been through it? And isolation and shame was quite powerful for me. So to talk to other men was quite scary, but she certainly talked me into it, and I certainly haven't looked back since. And it was just really nice meeting other men.
What was it like the first time you walked up through the door and said hello?
Well, it's a bit of a story, actually, Donald. Back then I was working for corrections, and there was only four men in the group, because I'm talking nearly 15 years ago, and there was a police officer and myself, who was a corrections officer, and a black power and a white power guy, and of course, when I walked in there, I recognised the two gang members, and I thought, well, this isn't going to go so well. The truth is it didn't matter what uniform we had and what patch we were all about hurt men. And from that time on, you know, I felt really empowered by talking to other men about myself. So.
Beautiful. And how about we'll pop over to Jim, and Jim, maybe you can tell us about yourself as a person and how you fit in with all the male survivors' issues.
So, as I said, I'm a peer support worker, so Paul's my boss. Hi, boss. And I work with men who have been sexually abused, as Paul was saying. But my thing is the groups. And the thing I'm most passionate about is building a community of men who support each other. And currently, with the lockdown, that's what we're trying to do by phone. Ring up men. I've just got a text while we've been talking from a guy who wants to give his phone to someone, his phone number to someone else. So I see my role as creating connection between the men and building a community of men so that they can support each other.
Yeah,
that would be my role in it all. I think.
I guess for many people, like I've worked with male survivors of sexual abuse as well, but for many people, this is a fairly new story to them.
Yeah.
It's a bit more well-known than it used to be, isn't it? But for the benefit of the listeners, what kind of guys, what kind of situations have you got? Like, historically, what happened to the guys? Is it priests? Is it you know, authority figures? Is it, you know, is it men? Is it women that assaulted them? Is it, you know, what kind of guys you got coming through the door?
Well, all of the above. So as Paul said, the type of men who have been sexually abused ranges throughout all strata of society and all professions and people who don't work and that kind of thing. So it's not restricted to a particular group of men. And it's certainly done by priests, it's by teachers, it's done by fathers and uncles and mothers and aunts. And there's research coming out now showing that men are sexually abused about as often as women are, and the perpetrators, about half of them are women. So it's not really as gendered as people used to think it was. You know, stereotypically, people think woman, victim, male, perpetrator, and actually that's not true. And that's what our men come up against a lot.
Does that match what you experienced as well, Paul, the guys coming through? Do you see any particular stronger patterns or weaker patterns?
No, especially working out in the prisons, Donald, I find that, well, I was quite surprised to tell you the truth, especially when I was a corrections officer, the amount of men that were gang affiliated and quite staunch men. I think that to say that a female was the perpetrator, and I have no statistics at the moment on gender, but the men wanting to talk about being abused by a female, I certainly was surprised about that myself, to tell you the truth, when it first started. But certainly since I've been doing this work, it's not such a surprise to me now. And just to have these men, you know, these very staunch men, very hardened men, talk about their vulnerabilities like this, it's really powerful when it finally comes out. Yeah.
I think I've heard that like 60-70% of the guys in the prisons have been
68% of men. Yeah, 68% of men that are incarcerated have had some form of sexual abuse. Yes, that's right.
And in mental health, it's talk between 80% and 100%.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's huge, massive.
You think there's a different impact based on who did the offending against them, or is it? I guess I've kind of heard stories like that, where if it was a priest, they hate churches; if it was a woman, they hate women. Or
I certainly think so for the men that are incarcerated, Donald, because you know, a lot of them I've found is, especially when they hold very highly their patch that they wear, to admit that. A lot of their traumas come from a female. Is a lot more embarrassing. And, of course, there's the old mentality that, you know, if two mates are at the pub and you're talking about one of them's been sexually abused by an older woman, it's normally a high five, but I don't think they realise the traumatic impact that has on our men.
Is it adults? I mean, obviously you're dealing with adults, but is it, you have many survivors you work with that, were raped or sexually assaulted as adults, or was it as a child more?
Yeah, I've found it not that often in the prison, because they have the old prison mentality of not telling or not narking, and so it's a lot more harder in the prisons to kind of disclose, if you like, what happens.
I've spoken to, had two men disclose to me they've been raped in prison. When I work as a social worker at the men's center, so I'm not surprised that that's going down. But it's disheartening to realize there's a significant body of. I remember Laura Stemple came from America, and she was saying there's as many rapes happening in prison as there are outside the prison, with the vast majority of them.
Yeah, I believe that. I don't know whether we can talk about it on the radio, but certainly the way men's physical response to things makes men comparatively easy to sexually abuse as adults. You just need to put something up a man's bum. I don't know if we can talk about this here. And he'll probably ejaculate. And also men get erections for all sorts of reasons. One of them is that they're turned on, but another reason is they're really nervous, they're really frightened. So all you need is a man with an erection, and you're most of the way there. And unfortunately, because not enough people know about this, men think that, you know, they're in a situation and they're really nervous and something happens and they ejaculate and they think, oh, well, I must have consented, when in fact they haven't. So it's not that hard to sexually abuse a man. And we should say at this, an adult man, and we should say at this point that in New Zealand, technically by law, we can't be raped. Only women can be raped. So sexual abuse of a man is actually a lesser offence, even though it has the same consequences for the man's life. Yeah.
The maximum sentence for both of those crimes is 20 years, but they're treated differently in the courts.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
I found it really interesting. I went to New York about 5 years ago, and I went to a conference, and they had you go to all these different workshops, and I went to this one about gender difference. And in the same states, they had a female school teacher have consensual sex with her 13-year-old student. And the story was exactly the same with a male teacher with a female student in exactly the same state. And one thing I was really blown away by was the female teacher got 7.5 years. The male teacher got 73 years.
Yeah.
So both identical situations. And, you know, I'm not condoning either situation, but what I am saying is there is some bias.
Yeah. In sentencing as well. Yeah, there are perceptions of the harm done by the sexual assault.
Yeah.
Yeah. And men also come up against things like the situation where Paul's talked about, say, with a school teacher. Well, you should have enjoyed it. You know, the idea that, you know, here's a woman going to teach you the facts of life, the joys of sex, when in fact it's sexual abuse, just the same as if it was done by a man.
So that, I can imagine that's even more disturbing for somebody when their sexuality has been mucked with because they think that it's them and I must like this. And but I've heard of men whose orientation or sexual behavior is out of alignment with their orientation, for example.
Yeah. That's the other thing. So if a man is experienced sexual abuse and has a sort of sexual response, which is a physical thing, and the abuser is another man, often men think, oh, am I gay? You know, am I gay? Maybe I'm gay because I enjoyed it. When in fact, it's nothing to do with their sexual orientation. It's more to do with their physiology, that if you do the right thing to a man, you'll get a sexual response.
I've come across some men that were, as young men, you know, 13-year-old, whatever, assaulted by a woman, an older woman, and from there they pursue relationships with older women in appropriate relationships. Is that how?
Yeah.
I just feel that, you know, this is where a lot of the confusion of sexuality comes into a lot of fit with our men is, you know, it's just quite simply because they were stimulized that their body absolutely reacted. But it's not till probably they get a wee bit older they start to see where the manipulation came from, if it was a lady that was a fair bit older or something. Do you know what I mean? And so it takes the men to kind of brave up to that bit of what happened to them. And I shouldn't have used the word brave up.
Well, I think it makes sense of it, eh? Because, you know, you get 40-year-old men coming in the door and, you know, they knew what happened to them was wrong. But to really make sense of it, they'd really not made sense of it until they were that old.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think, do you think that's, you know, like I understand that the research that survivors, you know, of Teroa did, but they looked into, you know, when men are disclosing, and it's like they're like 5 or 8 years older than women on average when they do come in the door. We talk about something that happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
I heard it was twice. So women take 10 years, men take 20 kind of thing.
So that's after the been abused, it takes them 10 or 20 years to actually seek help. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
And obviously some of that is the lack of services. Historically, there have been a lack of services for men and some exclusion, many services excluding men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's another aspect. I've heard of men seeking services 10 years ago and being rejected because it's only male perpetrators out there. Or
yeah, this one.
No, sorry, we don't work with men. I'm sad that happened to you. We only work with men, women, though, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And that's the part that makes me sad because, you know, a lot of the men that I work with or find, they do a whole lot of damage in that 20 years. You know, a whole lot of damage to relationships and violence and all of that. I just think it's absolutely paramount that those men get the support and find better ways of communicating. And, you know, the family life seems to be a lot healthier. I've certainly had partners come up to me and say, I wish he had got this done 10, 20 years ago.
Yeah. Mind you, we've got to be careful. Let's not stigmatize all men who have been sexually abused as being violent and having bad relationships. And, you know, not every man who's been sexually abused goes to prison or even does anything that's likely to land them there. You know, most men get along more or less, yeah. But would do a lot better and have better relationships and than if they haven't. The other thing is the myth that it seems to be applied to men, I've not heard it applied to women, that if you've been sexually abused, you're more likely to be sexually abusive. And that's just not the case. It doesn't work like that. People who have been sexually abused are about as likely to be sexually abusive as the rest of the population. So it's not a predictor, but it's one of the myths that goes around about men. And, of course, perpetrators, when they get caught, will often say, oh, I was sexually abused, that's why I did it.
Okay, so it's a cover or an excuse?
So it's sort of used the other way around, yeah.
As a way to avoid responsibility, maybe?
Yeah.
But I've had about 300 men disclosed to me in our practice at the men's center that they experienced some kind of a sexual abuse or some kind of sexual harm. And I can't, when I think of all those men, I don't think, oh yeah, most of those guys are hapless guys or whatever, were guys that were prison, ex-prison or domestic violence or whatever. They really didn't fit that bucket. And, you know, that doesn't mean every kind of man's coming through our door at the men's center, but we do get a huge range of different guys. You know, there were only some guys that I could see that had been harmed and struggled on for years, you know, as victims. And, you know, victims of domestic violence as well. Is that a pattern you see among the guys, both victim and perpetrating?
Yes. That's a good point, Donald. So someone who's been abused in childhood is more likely to get abused again and again. And so someone who's been sexually abused, say, as a little kid, is more likely to enter into relationships or situations that will be abusive and harmful to them. Yeah. It's if you're looking for a common denominator between all of our men, I mean, none of us has surveyed this fully, but that would be the one, that people get into relationship after relationship or situation after situation where they're treated really badly by other people.
That would be actually interesting, Donald. There doesn't seem to be a lot of information around the effects on men, does there? I've tried to look for a bit of it, and there's not really a whole lot of statistical stuff around what's there for men. Have any of you guys found that? Or
I actually contacted the Family Violence Clearinghouse to ask them about research on the experiences of male victims of family violence for New Zealand men, and they sent me back a link, and I went through all the research, and there was just nothing specific. There's little bits and pieces in other research, but it doesn't look like anyone's actually collected a bunch of men together and asked them what their experiences are.
And I just find it interesting, and I am coming from, you know, the prison model, if you like, because I've been in the prison for many, many years, and so I'm just naturally thinking about, you know, violence and stuff like that. I think it's kind of comes in hand, but with what Jim and they were saying, it makes sense to me too.
So one of the questions that I was thinking of is, what kind of effects does that kind of trauma have on people? Like, we've talked about difficulty in relationships and some other things. So what other kind of things do you see that how men's lives are affected by it?
So there's flashbacks, which is like a body memory of the trauma. And there's also emotional flashbacks, which is where a person has a very strong emotional reaction, which is no relationship to what's happening around them. There's nightmares. There's substance abuse as people try to dampen down their hypervigilance. So hypervigilance would be a real big one. Trouble sleeping, because your system... Once a person's been abused, their system prepares itself for more abuse and prepares itself to look out for more harm to happen. So people have trouble settling down, they have trouble sleeping, have trouble relaxing, have trouble resting.
And so they'll imagine they've struggled to find ways to manage with that.
Yeah. Anxiety is another one, which is related to this sort of hypervigilant, sort of permanent meerkat way of being. You know? Sitting up on your rock, trying to get your head around 360 degrees for the rest of your life.
I think too, one of the ways I try to describe it to the men is if you can imagine the Maori warrior, you know, ready for battle, and no matter what it is, because we've been hurt as young children, that we're always looking through those warrior eyes, and we look through everything as a battle. And it doesn't matter whether it's an employer, an intimate partner or any other kind of relationship. And I suppose one of the goals would be is to, because reality won't let us actually let that warrior go away permanently. Reality is about being able to try to walk beside that warrior so that when you need him, he's there, but learn to park him as well. Otherwise, you just see everything as a battle, and that's why a lot of men flare up.
It kind of reminds me of my response to the earthquake that we had in Christchurch a while ago. There's been a few times when it's been quite windy and there'll be a big gust of wind and things will rattle around a bit, and I'll just feel my heart kind of pick up a bit and I'll go, is that an earthquake? And start to, and then I realise it's not and calm down again.
That's
the sort of thing that survivors, that's all the time. They're basically on that little kind of edge wondering if something is going to happen.
Yeah, that's right.
And I imagine not having the words for it since it was so long ago and it's not connected to their current world at all, but they've still got that predisposition, eh?
Yeah. And up against the stereotype that it doesn't happen to men, or if it did, you should have enjoyed it, or harden up, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. A lot of shame. Shame would be the biggest thing, I would say. Paul, you will probably know this as well. You know, you meet a survivor for the first time, and so many times I have the discussion with them where they say, well, I'm not sure whether it really was abuse, and maybe I could have done things differently so it happened. It didn't happen, which is the same as saying to a woman, well, you know, you wouldn't have been raped if you hadn't have been wearing a short skirt, you know. And so one of the first things that guys have to learn is actually someone did something to you that was horrible, and it's their responsibility. It's not yours. And you shouldn't feel ashamed about it, because they did something to you that they should not have, and you were just a little kid.
Would you say that's a very gendered situation that, like, Ian and I talk sometimes about hyperagency in men, that, you know, men assume if something's happened to them, it's they're somehow meant to overcome it more.
Yeah. Be more in control of their environment. Yeah.
So overcome anything, any challenge that comes along, and, you know, with that failure to meet that challenge, it might be a bit more self-blame or blame by society as well. If you didn't want the sex, why'd you let it happen? Certainly I've seen, you know, heard any number of guys that are 14, 15 that were pressured into sex when they didn't want it.
Do you find that the men maybe have been abused as adults kind of feel like they should have resisted, like physically, especially if the, you know, if they're a big strong guy, they should have fought them off or something like that?
Oh, absolutely, especially in the prison, you know, because, and I hope it's okay to say this, but to be somebody's bitch is certainly demoralizing in that system. And I just think that, you know, I don't have the magic wand myself to say how to, you know, prevent this from happening, because, you know, the staff out there do a blooming good job. It's just a case of when men are struggling with that, to lose your masculinity in a prison environment is very dangerous in itself. A lot of them, you know, don't disclose until well and truly after the prison.
With this very a dark moment we're at, it's probably good to introduce this first song that Paul suggested, which is... Jim suggested All Over the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix.
There must be some kind of way out of here, say the Joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there, drink my wine. Plowman, dig my earth. None will level on the mine. Nobody of it is worth. Yeah.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Donald, and you're with Men Talk. Gee, how's a woman listening to this podcast likely to feel? And there is some fear about that there's been a blaming of women or something.
It's not about men are bad and women are good, or women are good and men are bad. It's that we're all in this together. That's not about gender. That sexual abuse happens to men and to women, and it's done by men and by women, and people who don't identify as either. And we all need to work in this together. I mean, the men's centre, most of the counsellors are women. The operations manager, Nolene, who's a lovely person, is a woman. So, you know, we're not bagging women. We're bagging the women perpetrators.
Yeah.
And saying there are women who do harm to men.
And you're saying that because there's a myth that there isn't. Not counteracting the myth, you're not pointing the finger.
No, not pointing the finger at all women, and counteracting the myth that women are good and kind, and men are sort of riddled with lust and testosterone. There's no gender in this. We're all in it together. We've got to support each other, regardless of.
I think it's really important that, you know, male survivors wouldn't have started without the support of the Women's Refuge and stuff like that too. So, you know, we're very grateful.
I do want to challenge the stereotype, though, that you know, men are bad and women are good. That's what I'm challenging.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not trying to turn around. I'm just challenging the stereotype.
Both men and women are human beings with flaws and
absolutely.
And I can't remember the word for not flaw. Virtues.
Yeah, virtues. I mean, I can think of two women who are partners of men that I support. And the both of them, if I could bottle them and sell them, I'd make a lot of money. I mean, they're absolutely gorgeous. They're absolutely lovely at supporting their men and their recovery. So, yeah, we need our women to help us recover.
So that's probably a good time to sort of segue into talking about recovery and what men can maybe expect from the recovery process?
I think the thing is, it's certainly my experience that with the men that I work with, they feel that because we are men, we need to fix things now. And the truth is now is a long time. You know, with the men that I work with, I think the thing is they need to understand that they're changing many years of thinking so that they're what they use to keep themselves safe has absolutely been embedded to them. And so it's actually about giving yourself some downtime and to actually understand that, you know, finding ways to normalise the conversation but not the act.
Mm.
And when you find people around you that you feel safe to talk about that you can just come out and say, you know, today I feel really shitty. I'm unsure why. And then if that person's safe enough to have that conversation with. Because most men, what happens is they come along and they say, great, I'm going to be working with Paul. I'm going to be fixed by next week. Then next week comes along and the mistake they make is they have an expectation that everything's going to be great in the first week or so, or maybe a couple of months. The truth is if they take away that expectation, they don't have anything but try to live each day as it comes. It's a much healthier way. I've found with the men that I work with anyway, that if you take away the expectation and normalise the conversation, most guys do pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I find. Also, meeting other men who have been abused is so helpful for them.
Yeah.
They know the biggest thing is the isolation and the shame, and to certainly in a group, to walk into a group and realise that every person here has been sexually abused, including the person leading the group. You see guys begin to recover really quickly within weeks and start to make connections and lift their head up and stop looking at their belly. And we talk about getting out of the victim hole, and men begin to realise that they do have power over their own lives and they do have power over the way they react to things. And men recover, begin to get well really quickly. Yeah. The other side of it is, you're never going to be as if you weren't sexually abused or experienced trauma. You know, it's not that you can get to a point where it's as if it never happened. It's you get to a point where it doesn't define you anymore. I think that would be the aim for our guys.
Yeah, I think too. The beauty of peer support is you can have conversations with men that probably some clinicians would feel uncomfortable or may do it in a different way. But a lot of the things for me is I used to use what had happened to me as an excuse for my behaviour sometimes, as an easy out to win an argument with my wife. And I would say, you know, it's all right for you, you weren't sexually abused. And I started to understand that I was keeping myself in the victim mode, and it's really important that you understand the difference between being a victim and a survivor. And that's one thing I found through meeting other men that were further down their journey, like King Clearwater. When I first met him, you know, he was much further down the journey, and he hit me up around being a survivor instead of a victim, really kind of challenged me on it. Well, one part of me wanted to say, you know, go and jump off a cliff. But when I went away and thought about it, I couldn't really argue with him because I know his life story. And I think that that's really important, and probably the power of peer support.
And I imagine the role of victim is a very awkward one for many men.
Awkward but familiar. It's very familiar. You slide into it, you know?
Yeah. And can you say something more about the groups, Jim? Because I remember my first experience going on to men's groups. And I call me an old hippie, but I've been along to a lot of them in different formats, mostly personal growth. I still remember walking into a room to do that for the first time. There were like 60 guys in that particular room. It was a large men's gathering, and it was pretty scary. So I imagine if you're coming in as a survivor and you're, you know, sexual abuse, and you're also maybe the offender was even male, you know, male as well. And you walk into this group and you're going to trust a whole bunch of guys. Like, what the hell? Hey.
Yeah. Well, the hardest part is actually making it through the first door of the first meeting. You know, quite a lot of guys will have two or three attempts. One guy came to the gate about three times before he actually made it down to the end of the property into the group room. But within minutes almost of coming in the door for the first time, the new guy is greeted and welcomed and introduced, and you see them visibly relax. And so that's the first part of their recovery in a group, is actually, you know, being part of it and feeling safe. Although some of them like to sit by the door or sit where they can see the door, or they care for who they sit with and that kind of thing. And that's their right. That's absolutely fine. Yeah. The groups are run really simply. It's a very simple format. Is how are you now? And how have you been since we last saw you? They ask each other that question. And so we run a whole group about that. Sometimes we might learn about something. We've got one guy who does Tai Chi. He'll come and do Tai Chi, who always uses the group. And if we have time, he'll do some Tai Chi. We do whatever we want, but mostly it's just a check-in. You know, how have you been? How are you feeling now?
You're not talking about the offending or anything like that. You're just...
No. Although they can. The men have the option to come along and tell their story if they want to. But most of the time when we're not... Men aren't discouraged from telling their stories, but the idea is to live now, to be where I am now. Because we can't go back and into the past and change what's happened, but we can look forward and we can be here now. And so that's what we do in the groups. Yeah. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely wonderful to watch. And it's pretty non-directive, and you know, we're pretty comfortable with bad language, that kind of thing. But it's a very warm, friendly, kind place to be. Mm.
And speaking as a person who's an outsider more to the group, I know it's the guys have warm relationships, and some of them form some good friendships, don't they? They look like they endure.
And the biggest thing, there's lots of big things. One of them is confidentiality. And the men really need to sign up to what's said in this room stays here. I mean, I can talk about myself, but I can't talk about what anybody else says or does. The way to ruin a group like ours is to breach confidentiality, of course. But the men are really committed to that and very respectful of what each other has to say. And there's leg pulling and, it's great. A lot of growth and happiness there.
Like, there's a lot of groups like this around the country, aren't there? You know, the Men's Center in Canterbury has one, but there's about six or eight different regions now.
It would be nice to be like AA. We don't use the AA model, but it would be nice to have the choices of groups like AA does. You know, middle of the day, evenings, Saturday morning. It would be nice to have that. That would be my dream, that in the future men can go wherever they want. Yeah.
There is a Crown inquiry that's been launched for church as well as those that were in the care of the state.
The Royal Commission is called the Royal Commission of Inquiry into Historic Abuse in State Care and Faith-Based Institutions. I don't know if there's an acronym for that, but it's stalled because of the virus. The commissioners are very committed people to hearing stories and making changes in the way New Zealand looks after our young people, basically, our children. And the way we treat people as adults in institutions. This is really groundbreaking. This is really good stuff. Yeah.
And it's really nice just to have government on board, isn't it?
The present government has done very well with this.
And the previous one as well. They were the ones that launched it, weren't they, before Labour came along?
Yeah, of course they did. So, unfortunately, because of the virus, everything's stalled, but it's going to start up again as soon as it can. And there'll be some great stories. And I think New Zealand will change as a result of this Royal Commission.
Well, I know that the Australian context, two-thirds of those people that came forward were men that have been abused while in state care, and it's sexual abuse.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
It's interesting.
I just wanted to butt in with the details of how to get in touch with the male survivors. The website is malesurvivor.nz. Do you guys have some contact details?
To get in touch with us, it's the Canterbury Men's Centre.
If someone else around the country wants to get in touch with a male survivor,
they go through Male Survivors Aotearoa.
The website malesurvivor.nz. Or they could possibly talk to their GP, or what kind of other options
That's for ACC, though, Jim. It's not for male survivors.
The GP, the counsellor, if they're under mental health, more and more in Canterbury Mental Health have blokes books and pamphlets and things about the work that we're doing.
ACC, if you mention ACC.
ACC refer people to us. Yeah.
Well, there's also the ACC counseling and sensitive claims, which a male survivor group like you guys would support somebody to do. But you can, if you're a male survivor or friends with a male survivor, you can look on the ACC website and they can access counseling for fairly extensive periods.
And we can recommend, Paul and I can recommend counsellors who are experienced at working with men. ACC counsellor. It's free. ACC is free. Two New Zealanders, unfortunately, someone who's not in New Zealand, I think you have to be, maybe residency is enough, but there are a few rules. Yeah, but ACC will talk about that. It's not us. We'll take anybody so long as they're a bloke.
What are the silver linings? Is there anything that comes out of a guy that has, you know, risen to such an occasion later in life?
Yeah, I've certainly found, like, even working, you know, at Male Survivors, like, we have some of the guys that have done a lot of their own work. We put them through training for IPS, which is intentional peer support, and we send them away to Nelson for a week, and they just learn some good communication tools. But the beauty of it is they're still working as the person they are. It's just a few a few tools to help them communicate or look at communicating in a different way, but it's certainly not the core business. It's about the men, you know, we're just helping them find some more tools to help other men grow. That's the beauty of it.
And our hope is that people might go and do some IPS training, and that's the start. I think to work in the field, you have to be prepared to do more training. That's the beginning level, that's the entry level. And, yeah, to do more things, people, we would encourage people to do more training. But you want the silver lining. People get mates. People come out of the bed sit. People, their relationships work better. They drink less. They don't smoke so much dope. They get on better with their employer. They come along to events that we do, like Christmas parties, and they bring their partner or they bring their children. And you just see people grow and develop and become more rounded and more healthy. Not rounded, you know, tubby, but become more healthy. That's the beauty of the work. Less medication too. A lot of men start, I'm not anti-medication per se, but a lot of men come along on you know, antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs and methadone and all sorts of other stuff. And we find as they build relationships and become more comfortable with themselves that they need much less medication, if any at all. I don't know what drug companies think of us.
I also think that, you know, a lot of men, when they say to me, Paul, what the hell does happiness look like? And I think, you know, as a group, we often share about not having expectations on what a man's supposed to be and finding some peace within who we are. They have an expectation that we're all supposed to be All Blacks. And about 3 years ago, I went to a hui down in Oamaru, and there was an agency there. I won't say the agency's name. Said, you know, that we're just like the All Blacks. We should all be like All Blacks. And we lost the game last week, but we can't worry about that. We've got to worry about the game that we're going to win this week. And I said to him, you know, that's a really poor expectation for men to kind of have to live up to, because at the moment we've got about 30 or 40 All Blacks in New Zealand, and that means that the other million men are nothing but losers. It's this type of macho imagery that really does a lot of damage to men. And instead of actually men just finding some peace, because they all say to me, what does love look like? And they seem to think it's very much like when we meet a new partner, female partner for me, obviously. You know, it's that lust, it's that feeling really good and all of that. And they feel that that's what love is. But unfortunately, it's my experience, and probably a lot of men will tell you now, that it's actually finding some peace and not having an expectation on who you are. Because if you don't have an expectation, if you take that expectation away, how can you be hurt?
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing is for men to be who they are. Yeah. You know, if you're a pianist or just someone who goes off to work and likes to come home and watch telly, so long as you're comfortable and happy and that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, just be who we are.
Absolutely. And just by that statement, Jim, you know, there's no expectation, and I think that's the key. If you don't have an expectation, you're just simply, I haven't seen yet how you can be hurt.
One thing, I had somebody come along to the groups once that you're facilitating, Jim and Paul, that he has a lot of experience training groups, and he's used to working with university students as trainer. And he said afterwards, I said, what was that like? And he said, you know what? They've got it all. They've got it all going. All the culture, you know, the sharing and how to support each other and how to challenge each other. But he said, usually he has to train the university students to figure out how to be in a group.
Yeah.
So that's something I've admired when I've come along to the group, and I thought, wow, these guys have got something that most men don't, to get along and see what it's really like to be a man who's gone through some hard times, or, you know, every man's gone through hard times, frankly, and to actually hear a bit about those, as well as see the guy and get to develop some real insight in how he thinks. I mean, that is gold. Mm. You know, when I see the group, I see those guys have got that gold from each other, and it's got something magical, you know. They all relate quite gracefully. They usually come in with such graceful engagement.
I think your average New Zealand man has far more sort of emotional self-awareness and knowledge than the average New Zealand man's given credit for.
You know, they get it. They know how to deal with each other. You know, that tenderness, you know, for men to be tender together is really opens up something, I think.
Absolutely. And Donald, I think it's really important, you know, like I like the thought that we are there to complement ACC councils. Do you know what I mean? We're there to work with them. It's not them or us. And I think that, you know, sometimes I'll go to an ACC counsellor, a registered counsellor with my client, and then when we leave, I just help and break it down and simplify it for them. Because often when men are going and talking about this, especially in the early days, their anxiety levels are really, really high.
Yeah.
Sometimes when our anxiety levels are high, we don't retain information very well. So it's really helpful to have somebody else here that's, you know, has been doing the work for some time, and hopefully I'm able to break it down for them. So that's the beauty of counsellors. That's the beauty of the Men's Centre. You know, it complements each other very well.
Who else should we get on the program now that we've had, you know, Discover Male Survivors? Is there any particular person or place we should snowball off to after you guys?
I reckon Trish, the ACC counsellor. I think we should get her on. She's very interesting about complex PTSD and about the work she does. I would say Trish.
Totally agree.
And what about this? If you guys could wave a magic wand and fix the world, what would you do? You only get one wish, and you don't get to wish for multiple wishes, okay?
I've already got my wish, and that is why we're in lockdown. I've got 1 week's worth of food and 4 weeks worth of beer.
Your wish is granted, my son.
I was going to have something much more sort of, you know, philosophical. I feel gazumped by you, Paul.
Go on, be philosophical.
So my thing would be to do away with narcissism.
Yeah?
If I could wave a wand, I would do away with narcissism. So no one was narcissistic anymore, that everybody had the ability to roll reverse, to empathize with everybody else. That's what I would do.
Yeah.
I had godlike powers.
Yeah.
And maybe give Paul more beer or something.
That would be the empathetic thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Don't share a beer, guys. Come on, with the pandemic.
If you would like to talk to someone about the issues raised in the show, you can contact the Safe to Talk helpline on 0800 044 334. That's 0800 044 334, or send a text message to 4334. That's 4334. You can visit the Safe to Talk website at safetotalk.nz. To contact Male Survivors Aotearoa, visit their website malesurvivor.nz. To contact Canterbury Men's Centre, visit canmen.org.nz or call 03 365 9000. I cannot stop, I cannot stop, I cannot move, 'cause I'm on the way.